Well, good morning, LifePoint Church. Good to see you here today. Welcome, welcome. If we have not had the chance to meet yet, my name is Lee, and I'm the teaching pastor here at LifePoint Plain City, and just really thrilled to have you here with us today. A couple things before we get going. If you are new, if this is your very first time, or you've been coming for a few weeks, I love to direct your attention to the little QR code on the seat back in front of you. It'll take you to a website called lpguest.com, and so you can even search that on your web browser, or you can scan that QR code. And on that website are two things that I think are super helpful when you're here at church with us this morning. One of those is there's message notes. If you want to follow along with my message and where I'm going, the scriptures, if you like to take notes, you can take notes to yourself. You can email those to yourselves, that kind of stuff. We'll have some links that I like to reference throughout the message as well. That'll be there. But also the second thing that's there on that website, lpguest.com, is the connection card. And if you would take just a few moments to fill that out, that is super helpful for a couple of reasons. One is we get to learn about how you heard about LifePoint, which we love to hear that. And so often we hear folks say, well, so-and-so invited me, which we love that to be. We want this to be a very welcoming and inviting place that you feel like you can invite your friends to church, whether they've been to church for their whole lives or they've never darkened the doors of a church. We want to be a church where no one walks alone. And so we're so glad to hear how people are finding out about us. But the second reason that is honestly more important is at the very bottom, there are six different ministries that we partner with that are doing really amazing stuff right here in Central Ohio. Ministries like DNA, Daily Needs Assistance, which especially during the holiday times gets more demand in terms of resources from clothing and food and those kinds of things. And so by supporting or choosing DNA, we'll make an extra $5 donation to them on your behalf. And so just by taking a moment to fill out and any of those ministries, we'll make an extra $5 donation to by you taking a moment to fill out that guest card. So we're so thankful that you did that. A couple of other things. One is if you are new with us, we are having today during the second service our starting point class. It's what we love directing people. If you are newer to LifePoint to learn more about who we are, you may have questions about our church and what we're all about, how we gather, how we do groups, what serving, what missions look like. You may have all kinds of questions. Well, starting point is the right place for you to begin, and it'll happen right after this service, during the second service. And so if you are interested in that, just come back to Guest Central right after this and let one of our blue shirts know, hey, I'd like to come to Starting Point today, and we would love to have you there today. We do that once a month, and so we would love to see you to be a part of Starting Point with us here today. And then lastly, you saw a little blue card, a pledge card right there around fueling the future. And you may have questions around that. Well, good news, I will share a little bit more about that later on and as we go through here today. And so don't worry, I will talk about what that is all about. I mentioned it a little bit last week, and today I want to dig a little bit more into that. But today we're kind of continuing on. We're nearing the end of our series called Everyday Faith, where we've been walking through the New Testament letter, James. And so James is the half-brother of Jesus, and we felt like James really helps us to see how do we actually live out our faith, not just on Sundays, but every day, right? Because our faith is meant to be something that impacts us every day of the week. And so the way that we've been saying it each and every week is that our faith in Jesus, it leads us to live like Jesus. You see, James, as he writes this letter to Christians who have kind of been dispersed around an area because of persecution, it was one of the earliest letters written in the New Testament, is James really wants followers of Jesus to understand that our faith, by claiming to have faith in Jesus, to be a follower of Jesus, is not just something that you claim that doesn't follow up with your actions. It's not just a belief-only kind of faith, but it's a faith that actually changes how we live, that we live differently because we've been made differently. That how we live should actually reflect the life that Jesus lived. And so much of what James teaches us are straight from some of the words and the mouths of Jesus as he shared and taught while he did his earthly ministry, or things that he emphasized. And so today we're going to continue on that. We're going to be in James chapter 4, heading into chapter 5. And so if you got a Bible, you can go ahead, you can open up and head to that page. It's in the New Testament. It's near the back. It's after some of the letters, after Hebrews. And then right there you'll find James. We'll be in James chapter 4, verse 13, and we'll head into chapter 5 here today. But to kind of get us ready for that, one of the things that I thought might be funny to begin with is in our household, which your household may have the same kind of problem, is there's one thing that tends to cause a lot of fights. Now, I probably should have talked about this last week because we did talk about fights and quarrels and what comes up, you know, through us as we looked at the wisdom that we live by. But one of the things that seems to be a common occurrence that causes fights in our family is this thing. right? Anybody else relate? You see what I'm holding here, right? It's a remote control, right, to the TV. Okay. Now you may be a family where like one person just, you know, holds onto the remote and it's their baby, right? Like you don't touch it. Otherwise, right, you get the wrath of that individual. Well, that tends to be in our family. It's like, who's the fight? Who can get to it first? Okay, because why? Why do we want the remote control so badly? Well, if you have the remote control, guess what? You can watch what you want to watch. You can go to what channel, it can be as loud or as quiet as you want. If you want to watch a movie, you want to watch a show. I mean, we live in a day and age where you can pause it, right? And then rewind it back. And so like we forget that like 10, 15, 20 years, like that, no way were we pausing show. Anyway, but you can record shows and go back and watch them. And so there's always a tussle around who gets the remote control. And so it got to be so bad that my wife actually just started putting names of individuals on the calendar around this is the day that they can have the remote control, okay? Because we just couldn't quite share it very well, right? There's such power in whoever had this little device because they, in essence, got to control what we got a chance to do. And the reason why I share that is that the things that flow out of that kind of control and desire in us, it shows up in our lives, not just around TV, which is kind of trivial. There was a movie back in the day called Click. I don't know if you remember. It was an Adam Sandler movie, and it was around a TV remote, and he wanted to kind of click and control his life by fast-forwarding it, pausing, rewinding, that kind of stuff there. And I think that, to me, is a great picture of where James is going today, because for most of us, if not all of us, we like to control things. Right, we want to be able to control what we watch. We want to be able to control who gets it. And often in our lives, we want to find ways that we can control it as well. Right, there's a sense inside of us that the future that's in front of us is determined and controlled by us. The decisions that we make, the choices that we make. And because it can be up to us, what that can often do is that can lead to kind of this scarcity mentality. And here's what I mean by that. Because we want to control our future, is we can tend to hold on to things with a little bit more close-handedness. And that's what James is trying to help us to see, is there's a problem in our passage is that we try to control and secure the future that's in front of us, right? And I think for many of us, that's what we believe, that our destiny, our future is determined by us. Now, I will say, our choices, we've talked about, they do impact our future. And we see that, right? We see that in terms of the choices that you and I have made have shown up in where you're at today. And so the choices that we continue to make will show up in the future as well. But underneath all of this is we can actually begin to believe in the same way that if we have this remote control that we've got the ultimate power. We can turn it off. We can change it. We can do whatever we want to do with that. And the reality is James is going to begin to confront that in us. Because when we start to have too much confidence in our ability to control the future is when we start to get in trouble. And really, here's what James wants us to really see. Is that there's someone else that actually is better at controlling our future. That Jesus secures a better future for us than you and I ever could. That's really where James is trying to take us today. Is that when it comes to the future that is in front of you and me, is that we've got to begin to come to this grips with who do we ultimately trust in terms of where our future goes. Because depending upon who we trust, it depends on whether we live more close-handed in our lives or more open-handed in our lives. Whether we tend to hold on and cling to things more tightly or whether we can hold on to things a little bit more loosely. And so James is going to try to convince you and me today that Jesus actually secures a better future for us. And it's because of that, that ultimately it should lead to a place where we can actually begin to trust him with not just the things here on earth, but ultimately with our eternities here. And so let's go ahead, let's jump in to James chapter 4. And here are some things that we want to begin to see, is that James is going to kind of show us is first off that we can begin to look to ourselves, then we can kind of look to control. And then lastly, he wants us to see that we need to look to Jesus when it comes to our futures and our lives. And you see, James is going to show us that when we try to secure our own future, some of the things that happen is we start to become anxious and controlling and even close-handed. So let's look at how we look to ourselves, starting in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. James says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow brings. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. You see, James is now starting to roll out the punches, and he begins to kind of confront kind of business leaders and people who kind of are maybe a little more entrepreneurial bent in their lives. And he tells them that there's this confidence that they have, right? Listen to the words that they say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town, we will spend a year there, we'll trade, and we'll make a profit. And then he says, yet you do not know what tomorrow brings. You see, what's going on here is there's confidence. There's an over and abundance of confidence in their lives, right? Now, what James isn't saying is that we shouldn't plan. He's not saying don't have a plan for tomorrow. Don't have a plan for the next year. Don't do, you know, 1 year, 5 year. Don't do any sort of strategic planning. James is not against planning. But what he is against is planning our futures without first seeking the Lord's will in your life. You see, what he's saying is as human beings, when we put too much confidence in the future that we plan, we're forgetting something. We don't even know what tomorrow brings. You see, unlike God, who is all-knowing, he's omniscient, there's nothing that God does not see and does not know. God knows what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. He knows what's going to happen in the next 5 days, 5 years, 5 months, 500. Like, God knows and sees everything. And when we start to have such kind of confidence that we believe that, hey, we're going to go, we're going to have this, and this is how it's going to play out, he's saying we're beginning to take too much confidence in ourselves. Right? Because if I was to ask you, do your plans always work out the way you planned? Right? When you say, I mean, we can't even plan our vacations that they go smoothly, right? Like, nevertheless, like, you know, when it comes to even bigger things in our lives, and when we look ahead a month or a year from now, right? Like, I imagine for many of us, there's dreams and desires and futures in front of us that we want to see happen. But we've been confronted and we begin to know that life doesn't always happen the way that we planned or the way that we intended it to. And you see, when we start to have too much confidence that we think, man, I'm going to go and this is going to happen, we're setting ourselves up for failure. Because that's what he tells them. He says, your life is but a mist. You are here for a little while and then you vanish. See, rather than believing that you are somehow immortal, that you are somehow able to predict and to accomplish the future. You see, when we begin to plan without God, we're assuming that we can control what we can't control. You see, may often you hear in life, control what you can control, right? Control the controllables, control the things that you can't control. Where we get in trouble and where anxiety and where fear start to creep in is when we start trying to control things that we can't control. I love there's this picture of this in the Old Testament, the Tower of Babel. If you remember this in Genesis 11, you see the people, humanity at that time, was really achieving wonderful things. And they came together and they said, we want to build a tower up to the heavens, and we want to make a name for ourselves. And this is when God dispersed the people across the known world, and that's where, you know, all the multitude of languages really comes from. And the problem that God had wasn't that they were just trying to build a tower, but the problem that they were doing it in such a way that they actually wanted to be God. It's this overconfidence in our own abilities. That they said, we want to make a name for us, that we want to be able to touch the skies. We want to be able to build something up so high that we can begin to look down on others. We, in essence, want to take the very place of God in our lives. And God knows that when we try to be God, that that's actually one of the worst things that can happen to us, because we don't have the ability to control the future like he does. And when we try to step into a role that we're not meant to play, death, brokenness, destruction, it happens, because we can't carry the weight of that kind of role. And so God disperses them. There was this overconfidence in themselves. Proverbs even warns us, the heart of man plans his ways. Again, God is not opposed to you planning your futures. But it says, but the Lord establishes his steps. Right? Man plans his ways, but the Lord is the one who establishes it. You see, James is confronting that assumption Because he says, you and I do not know what tomorrow is going to bring. And then James moves into chapter 5 and he tells us where that mindset begins to lead. Look with me in chapter 5, verse 1. He says, come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like flour, like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who moved your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on earth in luxury and in self-indulgence, and you have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you. You see, what happens is when we start to believe that we can control the future, when we start to look to ourselves, what we begin to do is we have this mindset that it's mine, right? That you think of the Finding Dory, the seagulls, mine, 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 mine. You see seagulls everywhere they go, like they're grabbing, it's mine, it's theirs, they're grabbing a hold of it. Or you've got young children, right, and they want to hold on to it, like mine, this is mine, my toy, you can't have it. We cling and we hold on to things. And here's what he says is begins to happen. He begins to condemn them because they're putting their identity in their wealth, in their resources. He says, come now, you rich. He's not going after people who have money. But what he's doing is he's going after people who find their identity in their money, who find their identity in what they have, and in not whose they are. When we start to gain more security and comfort and confidence in the things of this world, we're setting ourselves up to be in opposition to God. And listen to the way that James draws out with these verbs. He says, here's what they have done. Because they're holding on to these things, he says, you're hoarding up and laying up treasures for yourselves. He describes what's happening when they begin to hoard on to their wealth, their resources. He describes them as these riches are rotting. Your garments, they're moth-eaten. Your gold and silver, they're corroding. He says, they're just laying around. It's like they're gathering dust because they're not being used. They're not being used. When we begin to hold on to our resources, rather than deploying them for service, he says, you're hoarding them. And then he says, you've withheld. You've kept back in verse 4. These laborers who worked because you have money and you are now controlling them by not paying them. You're holding on. You're keeping back the wages that they've earned because in verse 5, you're living in earth in luxury. And again, he's not saying you can't have and enjoy nice things here on earth, but what he's saying is, that's where you're finding your comfort, your security, your hope, your refuge. You're living as if heaven is here on earth right now, that there isn't an eternity in front of you. You see, when we believe that we can secure a better future for ourselves, here's what we do. We hoard. We hold on to stuff rather than trusting God. We protect it instead of give. And we end up using people as commodities, as means to an end, rather than loving them. And here's the warning. He says, you have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. What's he warning against? I feel like this crowd is going to get this part, okay? He says, why do you try to fatten an animal? Because it's going to get slaughtered. You want it to be well-fed. You don't want it to be starved. And so what he's saying is, in the way that you're living here on earth, finding all of your hope, you're feeding yourself with the things of this world, you're fattening your hearts, knowing, not knowing that, guess what? That meal is leading you to your destruction. That those desires that you're giving into are leading you to a place that is not going to satisfy you. It's not going to bring contentment in your life. And see, what James is trying to tell us is that self-protection often leads to self-destruction. Right? Do you remember even the words of Jesus? Right? If we try to save our lives, what do? We lose them. But if we lose our lives for his sake, we gain them, we save them. See, the kingdom of God is an upside-down kind of kingdom. It doesn't work the way we often think. You see, in our world, it's, man, you got to, if you want your future, you've got to be him. You got to be the one to go out and achieve it and make it happen. Now, you do have to work hard with that, but there's also this sense that we've got to live in such a way that we're trusting that there's someone else directing our future in front of us. That somebody else in front of us is actually the one who's sovereign and in control and not us. And he's a good king and a good God who wants a better future for you and me than we could ever imagine. And you see, what God is trying to get them to see is he hears the cries of his people. They've reached the ears of the Lord of hosts, verse 4 tells us. You see, God sees, God cares, and God acts. He's saying you don't need to hold on. You can jump and you can let go. If you've ever been in the pool and you've got younger kids and maybe you're teaching them how to swim, maybe you've been to that point, and there's this sense where they're on the edge of either the diving board or the edge of the pool, and you're in there, but without you in there, they're afraid to jump in, right? And you're just trying to get them to say, like, hey, it's okay, you can do it. But as soon as mom or dad or family is like, knows that they're there, there's this greater sense of, oh, okay, I can jump because I know someone's there to catch me. You see, James is trying to help us to see is that when it comes to how we live on this earth, we can't put our trust in ourselves that, man, we're going to be able to jump and make it happen. He's saying that you and I, we can jump being open-handed because we know that there's one, Jesus, who will catch us. It's about learning how to trust God with our resources, with our time, with our talents, and yes, with our treasures. You see, we've got to trust in a person and not just our plans. And so before we can open our hands to Jesus, we've got to let go of what we're clinging and holding on to. That's why we need to look how we can look to control. Let me dig into a little bit of that more. You see, the merchants, what they believed in James chapter 4, 13 through 17, is they had their own timeline, today or tomorrow, right? We all have timelines of when things are going to happen. I mean, Michelle and I were talking about our future and things that we're planning or saving for. It's like, hey, when this happens at this point, or hey, at this point in the year, or hey, a year from now, or 6 months from now, or 3 years from now, we're trying to make plans. And the reality is I can get all worked up about what's going to happen next month or next year or 2 years or 5 years from now, but I can't control the future. I don't know what's going to happen. But when we start to set these timelines as like they're written in pen and not pencil, we're trying to control our futures. Right? The location. Hey, we're going to go in such and such a town. You see, my plans for our lives, I know they didn't include Plain City when we started ministry about 10 years ago. It wasn't there. Wasn't on the radar. I mean, we thought when we were in Dayton 6-7 years ago, we thought, hey, that's where we're going to, man, that's just where we're going to do life and ministry from. But you see, we've got to learn to live. How do we have an open-handedness in our lives? Knowing that it's not about our plans and our timelines and our places, but it's God's plan for our lives. Living open-handedness, open-handed. They're going to carry on business. They're going to make a profit, guaranteeing the outcome. Nobody starts a business. Nobody starts a relationship. Nobody moves into a place. Nobody does things without thinking, hey, this is going to go exactly as I thought it would be. It's going to go greater than I planned or imagined. But we sometimes forget to plan that. Right? Things don't always happen that way. Job loss happens. Miscarriages happen. Cancer diagnosis happens. Like, things show up in our lives that we weren't ready and planning for. And when we experience those things, we're reminded that we really aren't in control. And then in James 5, he confronts the wealthy. They're hoarding their wealth because they want to control security, withholding wages so they can control and manipulate others. They indulge in comfort, controlling their own lifestyle. They're using the systems to their advantage so they can have control with power. You see, when we try to control the future, we almost always ended up controlling people and money. And so here's the question, why? Why do we want to control so badly? Because control feels like safety. Control feels like safety. You see, underneath control, here's the underlying emotion. It's fear. It's fear. The reason why we want to control is because we're afraid of what could happen. We're afraid that we're going to get hurt. We're going to be afraid that someone we care about is going to get hurt. We let fear be the driving emotion. And listen, fear can be a good thing in our lives, but it's not the best thing at directing us. Fear is great when there's a bear out in front of you, or when a car swerves. Like, fear is helpful. It can help save us. But when we're living in fear, afraid of what tomorrow has for us, we're not living by faith. You see, fear is trying to get us to believe that if I hold everything together, it won't fall apart. If I can just hold it all together, if I can hold my marriage together, if I can hold my kids together, if I can hold work together, if I can hold our finances together, if I can just hold it a little tighter, a little stronger, right? My life will go the way I want it to. You see, control is a way of telling us, I'm going to be okay because I can control it. I'm strong enough. I'm smart enough. And so we cling and we hold on to. I mean, so much of, like, I remember, you think about today, we've got, snowplow parenting, helicopter parenting, kind of that idea of, like, helicopter parenting are the parents who just, man, they hover over their kids. But then we kind of shifted gears. And there was this kind of idea of snowplow parenting. Like what a snowplow does? It removes any sort of barriers in your way. And one of the things that we can have as parents is because we're afraid of the future for our kids, we want to try to remove anything in their lives that's going to make it hard for them. We want to remove friction. We want to remove challenges from them because we don't want them to suffer. We don't want them to, to hurt. We don't like seeing our kids try to figure life out on their own. Finding out when you are with the wrong friends and, they make bad decisions and then you're hurt by that, or you take a step into a career vocation to go work somewhere and you feel like, man, I'm trying to warn you, but, so all the things that happen, when we try to just remove those obstacles, you see, it's fear driving that. And actually, one of the best things that can happen to our lives is we start having some problems, especially for our kids, because it allows us then to realize that we're not in control, we don't know what to do, which leads us to a place of ultimately trusting the Lord. You see, we want to manage our family's outcomes, try to choose our teachers for our kids, the sports teams, their friends. Because if we can just manage every schedule, every moment, every possibility, then we feel like they're going to be okay and I'm going to be okay. We get into a place of over-controlling it. And the reason why we fight for control so much is because we're just, deep down, we're scared. We're scared. We're scared of failing. Scared of losing what we love, being unprepared, not being enough. We're scared of not being safe. This isn't as much about power, but it's about fear. And friends, the opposite of faith isn't doubt. It's fear. It's fear. Because faith is ultimately about trust. And when fear comes into the play, who do we trust? We're tempted to trust us. That's why it's the opposite of faith. Because we're not trusting in the Lord. We're trusting in us. You see, our security is not found in controlling the future, but in the God who sees it and who is the one actually holding it. You see, the good news is that we can actually let go of the things that we want to hold on to so tightly because Jesus is right there. So Jesus is right there. Our kids went... they went to the World of Dicks over there by Polaris, and they got that rock climbing wall that's there. Maybe you've seen that or not, but they wanted to get up there and do it. And they've got the rope, right, that they're there. Like, some of the ones are kind of self-roped on there, so that's kind of cool. But on some of the sides, they've actually got a person there that's holding the rope that's there. And right, and why is that person there? Because if my kid isn't strong enough and they can't do it and they fall, they don't just plummet down and break something. And so, but sometimes there's this fear of, like, I can't let go. But what James is trying to get us to see is the reason why we can actually let go is because Jesus is right there with us. It's almost like we're holding onto this rope and we've never looked, all we've been doing is looking at our circumstances, looking at the thing we're holding on to, and we feel like, man, if I let go, I'm falling to my death. And the reality is like, James is trying to say, hey, Jesus is right there. He's not going to let you fall. You see, the tension in this passage from us trying to secure our own future is we try to hold on to things. We control things with our planning, with our effort, with our resources, but it never works out the way we wanted it to. It leaves us anxious, tight-fisted, and really honestly, just tired, just exhausted. And this is where the gospel steps in for you and me. You don't have to hold your life together. You don't have to act like you got it all together either. Jesus already has you. That's the hope for the believer. Is Jesus lived life with an open-handedness. He came to this earth to show us how it was meant to be lived, right? You remember in the garden when he's praying and he's got drops of blood coming out of his tears over this overwhelming stress on him of, I'm going to the cross to be killed and murdered for the sins of the world. It's a lot of weight on that. But yet Jesus, before the Father, said, Lord, not mine, but your will be done. Open-handed, not close. Jesus opened his hands. He entrusted his life to the Father. He chose surrender to the Father and not trying to control. He entrusted his future fully to the Father. And then on the cross, do you remember in Luke 23 what he tells the Father when he says, into your hands I commit my spirit. Again, Jesus entrusting himself to the Father's will for his life. And what did God do? God raised him up from the grave, overcoming our sin, our shame, our brokenness. The resurrection is like God shouting to human history, you can trust me. You can trust me. When you feel like it's all falling apart, you can trust that I'll be there to hold you together. When you're not sure what tomorrow has in front of you, you can trust me knowing that I've got it planned. That even if it doesn't go the way that you wanted it to, I'm working a better plan for your life than you ever could. The resurrection is proof to you and me that sin and brokenness doesn't win in the end. That we can actually live open-handed with God's plan for our futures. You see, Jesus, he walked into the future, the darkest possible future of death. And what did he do? He came on the other side, resurrected and alive. You see, the hands that were opened on the cross are the hands that hold your future. Those nail-pierced hands are the hands holding you and your future. So if Jesus could trust the Father with his future, do you think you can trust him with yours? When Jesus' life was on the line, he trusted the Father's plan. He trusted God's plan. And so if you and I, if we really believe that Jesus secures our future better than we ever could, what would that look like? It looks like for you and me living life open-handed rather than closed-fisted, right? If your hands are closed, you can't receive anything. You can't receive anything because you're trying to protect and control. But if our hands are open, we are in a posture of receiving from God. And so for some of us, it means there are things that we're holding on to, holding on to our kids, their future, or as parents, there's this very vulnerable thing of, Lord, they're not even ours, they're yours. How do we open our hands? Maybe your marriage, struggling, broken, holding on tight. Just, Lord, help me be open-handed. Work, you're not sure how things are going to play out, and so there's this fear of, I got to hold on, that, Lord, help me be open-handed. As I look at my finances, God, I'm just trying to hold it on together. God, help me. How do I live with an open-handedness in my life? You see, when we live life with open hands, we're not letting fear control us. We're not letting, we're not trying to secure our own safety, but we're trusting God. And this is especially true when it comes to our finances. That's why James was hitting at money so much, because that can be the thing that we look to. As long as we just have enough in the account, we feel safe, we feel secure, then we can kind of purchase and to do the future that we want for us. When we put our confidence in our earthly possessions, we're setting ourselves up for failure. You see, what generosity, again, is doing, we talked about this last week, it's about declaring my allegiance about who I'm friends with, the world or with Jesus. And it's not something that we do to try to impress God to love us more, but generosity is really what our life looks like of just being open-handed with the resources he's entrusting to us. You see, because when your future and my future is safe in God's hands, then we can be open with ours. And so what are you holding on to too tightly? And how can you begin to open your hand instead? What might that look like for you this week? What are you holding on to? What are you clinging to? And listen, for some of us, as we get to, I want to talk about, because this is always the awkward part, right? How do we talk about money at church? Especially for the first time, he's like, see, look at that, church, I just care about money. Oh, what's not true. The reason why we care about our finances is because often it's a reflection of our hearts. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also, Jesus taught. And so for some of us, as we think about how do I live open-handed, how do I not look for safety and comfort in my finances, but how do I live being generous with what God has given me, one of the challenges that we find is our finances are just a mess. We're in debt over our eyeballs. We don't have a plan. We're not really sure what we want to be, but we don't know how. I'd love to help us in that way. And so in January, we're going to host a Financial Peace University class here. And so if that's something, as you think about, man, what would it look like for me to be able to put a plan together for the next year about how to actually begin to get more control over my finances so I can be more generous with them? So I can at least see a future in front of me that is living and letting God direct it rather than letting my debt collectors drive it. That I can begin to chart a path that would align with what God would want me to do rather than being told with what I can and can't do. Putting a plan together, seeking God's will about seeing, Lord, how do you want me to think about money and my finances? How can I live open-handed? And so if you're interested and want to learn more about when that class is going to happen or being a part of that, in the bottom of the message notes, there's a link. And it's just an interest form. Just fill out that. Just give us your contact information, and I will follow up with you and just say, hey, here's when the class is. If you would like to be a part of it, here's how you can sign up free of charge. And you'll be able to go through this class over 9 to 10 weeks, getting some training, getting some tools together, putting a budget together, putting a plan together to help you to begin to see what does my future look like with God directing it, being generous and open-handed, rather than just swimming with stress and overwhelmed with, I'm just not sure what tomorrow is going to bring. What next year is going to bring. And so if that's you, if you just say, "How I'm interested in that," you can just click on that, sign up, and we'll walk this road together. But I want you to imagine, what does it look like for you to make decisions from a place of peace rather than fear? Imagine waking up without the stress of the world sitting on your chest. Imagine generosity that feels joyful and not kind of begrudgingly, because the Lord loves a cheerful giver. See, that life isn't imaginary. It's what life looks like when we can see and how we live open-handed. And so, would you bow your heads and close your eyes with me? As we think about God, how we might respond in this moment. As I think about in our lives, Lord, what generosity could look like with God, how controlling our worlds can feel. It feels like, God, that we just try to secure our future because, God, if we're honest, we're just not sure who we can trust. Because deep down, we maybe want to trust ourselves because at least we know who to point the finger at the end. God, for some of us in here, we've been living life on our own terms. We've been trying, God, to chart a course and a path for our lives. And we found ourselves in a bit of a mess. And we found ourselves in a place that it's just not all as cracked up as I thought it would be. And God, as I've been going through life holding on, I want to be open-handed, Lord. That if Jesus, you really do have a better future for me, and that the proof of that is in the cross, that you died so that my eternity could be settled and secured, that sin does no longer has to have a claim on my life, that the power and penalty of sin can be, God, rid away from me. That I can be forgiven. I can be made new. I don't have to be a slave anymore to sin. God, I can be free. And so maybe that's where you're at here today. Maybe you've never trusted Jesus. You don't have to hold your life together anymore. I want you to know that Jesus came to take the weight you've been carrying. That you can give him your life. You can give him your future. And maybe all that means is right now in this moment, you can just say to him, Jesus, I'm letting go. And I trust you. And here's the good news, he will not let you go. And maybe for those of you here that you are a follower of Jesus, maybe this is a moment of just asking the Holy Spirit, Lord, where am I clinging? God, what do I need to let go of? God, how can I be more open-handed? How can I trust you more, Jesus, with my future? Because I know, Jesus, you are right there. And my future is better because you are the one leading it and not me. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.